Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm Brian Martin Burkholder, University Campus Pastor, and I'm very pleased to welcome us into several collaborating projects. First of all, we're launching the Augsburger Lecture Series in the chapel this morning, and I'll share more about other opportunities to engage with the Augsburger Lectures and Scott McKnight. The theme for the Augsburger Lectures is Kingdom Vision as a Way of Life. And today's focus for this chapel, Love as Commitment. And alongside the Augsburger Lecture Series is Mission and Service Day with Career Services and Campus Ministries. And we have a number of mission outreach service agencies on campus today. We're going to put the list up. It's there. And sorry, I was looking for it in the TV monitor, and it's not there. But we're pleased that you're here. If you'd stand, if you're from one of these agencies, we'll welcome you with applause if you're here. And they will be in the Campus Center Greeting Hall with their displays throughout the morning, and also there's a lunch opportunity to engage with them, and I'll share more about that later. Let's open our hearts, open our minds, open our souls and our voices in song with Andrea and Perry leading.
We all please stand and turn to number 163 in the blue book. Obey My Voice.
Mark 12, 28 through 34. One of the teachers of the law came and heard the Sadducees debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him,
"Of all the commandments, which is most important?"
Jesus answered,
"The most important one is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these."
"Well said, teacher. You are right in saying that God is one, and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices."
When Jesus saw that he had answered wisely, he said to him,
"You are not far from the kingdom of God."
And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions.
Good morning. It is my great honor to introduce this year's speaker for the annual Augsburger Lecture, focusing, as Brian said, on the theme Kingdom Vision as a Way of Life. This lectureship made possible by an endowment from Dr. and Mrs. Myron Augsburger, the fifth president of Eastern Mennonite College, was established to bring notable speakers to campus in the area of Christian evangelism and mission. And I'd like to acknowledge the Augsburgers. Please stand. Let's acknowledge them. Thank them. This year's distinguished lecturer is the Reverend Canon Dr. Scott McKnight, New Testament scholar, theologian, historian of early Christianity, and widely published author. A sought-after speaker, he has gained a worldwide audience, with his books being translated into several languages. Dr. McKnight is also a blogger with Jesus Creed, a leading Christian blog. Dr. McKnight currently serves as the Julius R. Mante Professor of New Testament at Northern Seminary in Lombard, Illinois. He's an ordained Anglican with Anabaptist leanings, as he describes himself, and is known for his writings on issues in modern Anabaptism, as well as on many other topics, such as the emerging church, spiritual formation, and Christian living. Please join me in giving Dr. McKnight a warm welcome.
It's an honor to be with you. I've known about Eastern Mennonite for many years. I've never been here, but I was delighted by the invitation from Brian, and I was going to be able to see Mark Thiessen Nation when I got here. And I want to thank also Dr. Augsburger and his wife for this kind endowment so that I would be able to come to be with you. I grew up in a Baptist church, and being restricted to 20 minutes was impossible. So I'm going to try to narrow this down to 20 minutes. One day I woke up to an email from a friend who said, you may not want to read this, but, and then he gave a name, a certain well-known historian has decided to take issue with your blog, and he said something like this: "To put it mildly, it's pretty harsh." So I went to the link, of course, just after having and while I was drinking coffee, and it was so harsh that I had to quit reading it. But I was curious to what he was going to say next, so I waited a while, and then I read a little bit more. It took me three times before I got through it, and he was really hard on me. And I would say it was mean, and it was wounding and harmful. So I thought, what do I do to this? And I thought, I'm going to get back. I am not going to sit here and study Amazon every day to find out what he publishes next, but when his next book comes out, I'll be ready to read it. So it was a couple years later that he wrote a book. And I read the book with every intent of getting back at him as I had planned. So I read it, and I read it carefully, and I jotted down notes, And then I wrote up a blog post about it, but before the blog post appeared, I wrote the person a letter. And what I planned on doing was when he wrote something, I was going to write to him a letter of kindness to see how he responded. Because you never know, do you? So I wrote him and I told him about how much I liked his book. And I went through pretty careful all the things I liked about the book. And then at the end, I had a few suggestions for improvement. And he wrote back a letter to me, and these were his first words. "You're a lot kinder to me than I have been to you. I ask for your forgiveness." That person and I have been corresponding weekly, if not daily, for 4 years. And we've never met, although I will be meeting him in Pennsylvania later this year, but I won't tell you his name. But I learned a lesson there because I think of my Anabaptist leanings, is what was said, is that the only way to undo a cycle of violence and disagreement and division in this world is not to ramp up the division by striking back, but instead to end cycles of ungrace with cycles of grace. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I do this every time, and I'm not going to tell you it always works, but this has been a sacrament of grace in my own life, that this morning I got an email from my friend. He prays for me when I'm speaking in places. He often says, "What is the difference between God and Scott McKnight?" And he says, "God is everywhere, Scott is everywhere but his seminary." But we communicate all the time about all kinds of topics. We talk about family. We talk about things we're doing in our life. And it changed. Our relationship changed because of a cycle of grace. You and I right now are living in a world that is so marked by violence and strident language to one another and about one another. It can be unnerving just to look at Facebook to see the recent conversations about politics and everything else. And the biggest challenge that Jesus gave to you and to me as followers of Jesus was written in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 to 48. And I want to read that, and then we'll look at Mark chapter 12. Jesus says this in the Sermon on the Mount. "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Now, we're not quite sure what he's quoting, and all the scholars have debates, and they can't agree, and that's what makes them scholars. Because nowhere in the Bible does it say, hate your enemy, but there are times when it suggests that. "But I tell you," Jesus said, "love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, because," he says, "that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He, after all, causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." That's nice of him, you know. "If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that?" That's an insult, to be compared to tax collectors. "And if you greet only those of your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? So," Jesus says, "be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And this perfection obviously means loving neighbors and loving enemies. The challenge that Jesus gives to you and me as his followers in our world, not unlike the world that Jesus himself lived in, is to turn our enemies into our neighbors by loving them and praying for them. So it might be worth our time to think about who our enemies are. And I know because you're Anabaptist, you don't have any. Except Donald Trump. So I will list the generalized enemies in American society, perceived that way by some, of course not you, so I'm not picking on you. Undocumented workers, or often called illegal immigrants. Now, Middle Eastern immigrants. I've just been in Europe, and they are facing Middle Eastern immigrants in ways that they've never faced before, these nice mono-ethnic societies like Finland and Denmark are finding challenges, and they're finding that they also have feelings of racism. Political parties. Today, I find that many people cannot speak with any kind of Christian grace about either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Is that Christian? People of a different sexual orientation are also in the same category of enemies in our society. And people who are on a different economic scale, and in particular, today the language seems to move to people who are in the 1%, although I doubt that there's much statistics always behind that. Each of these is our challenge to turn from enemies into our neighbors. I don't know who your enemy is, but each of us is tempted to demonize others, to other others, and to turn them into enemies. And if we want to walk in the way of Jesus, we have to plot strategies that when we get the opportunity, we are going to turn the cycle of ungrace into a cycle of grace. So we must face the reality that each of us has enemies. And we must face the reality of asking the question, what can I do to turn my enemies into neighbors? And Jesus gave us a strategy for doing this, and I call this strategy the Jesus Creed. In Mark chapter 12, which was a text that was read this morning, where Jesus is asked of all the commandments, because this is a debate, probably, in his world, of either multiplying Torah, the law, into more rulings called halakha and halakot, is to multiply these by clarifying the law so that if you don't break any of these rules, you will never break the law. Or there was some debate about what is the essence of the Torah? Can we reduce it? So Jesus is asked of all the commandments, in Snow White fashion, which is the fairest of them all? And Jesus says, Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, Ahavta Et Adonai Eloheka V'cho Levavka, V'ubekol Nafsheka, V'ubekol Modecha. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and he adds, with all your mind and all your strength. And I think the really strong statement of this is that Jesus in Matthew says, from these two, all the law and the prophets hang, which is a way of saying all commandments in the Bible are about loving God or loving others. And Mark says that there is no commandment greater than these two commandments. So Jesus reduces it to love. Well, love, like forgiveness, is a great idea until you have an enemy to love. Right? C.S. Lewis once said, forgiveness is such a lovely idea until you have something to forgive. Love is like that until you have an enemy. If everybody is your friend and all you know are your friends, it's fairly easy to go through life without the tension of needing to cross deep boundaries in order to love someone. But what about these other people in our society? Are you genuinely trying to make peace with people who vote for Donald Trump or people who vote for Hillary Clinton? Are you really trying to make peace, or are you exacerbating the problem that we have in our society? What is the Christian calling if it is not to justice and peace and reconciliation? But the question I think we have to ask is, what is love? And I was teaching a college course for many years. When I was teaching at a college, I'm now teaching at Northern Seminary, That's not really an advertisement. It kind of is. And I was teaching college students, and part of the course was on love and relationships. It was a sort of course that morphed into that. So a third of the course was devoted to readings about relationships and love. And I was always struggling with the meaning of love. What does the word love mean? If you look in an English dictionary, you get one definition. It's largely about deep-seated emotions and affections. But is that what the Bible means by love? So one time, I basically read through the whole Bible asking myself this question. What does love mean in the Bible? Well, in the Bible, love is not defined anywhere like that, but instead, love is seen in the way God loves. And I came to four conclusions about love in the Bible. And now I want to apply this to your enemies, and at some point you may just want to decide to move out of the picture. You don't want to do that with your enemies. But the first is this. The first idea of love in the Bible, by observing how God loves, is that love is a rugged commitment. Yahweh's love for Israel is anything but smooth sailing. Israel's okay most of the time and really bad at other times. And Yahweh's relationship, as described in the prophet Hosea, is anything other than reciprocating intimacy. Instead, it's frequently troubled in relationship that Israel is unfaithful and described with the strongest of words in the Bible in her unfaithfulness. But Yahweh, it says in Isaiah, Yahweh's hand is stretched out to her still. So that love becomes, in the Bible, Yahweh's rugged commitment to another person. It is not something that is only committed so long as it's going well. It's a commitment through thick and thin. It is not simply about friendship and intimacy and happiness, but it is a rugged commitment. And if you love someone over time, let's say more than 2 years, more than 1 year, 6 months, you will know what rugged commitment means. That you will say, I wonder if I should turn back on this relationship. Do I want this relationship to continue? Or am I willing to stick it out and realize that love is measured in the evening of a life, not in the morning sun? It is measured by love over time. It's a rugged commitment. But in the Bible, love is also not only a rugged commitment, it is a rugged commitment to be with someone. So this idea of God's presence, God is with Israel first, with Abraham. God is with Abraham in Genesis 15, smoking pot. Actually, I should have accented that differently, in a smoking pot. Where it's sort of an odd scene, but God comes into the middle of the presence of these animals to demonstrate his presence. Then Yahweh is present as a cloud and a fire. And Yahweh is present in his glory in the temple. And then in Matthew chapter 1, we are told that Jesus is God with us, the presence of God. And when Jesus leaves, he says the Spirit will come and he will be with you. And in Revelation 21, in the new heavens and the new earth and in the new Jerusalem, God again will be with his people. Love is about a rugged commitment to be with people. It is a principle of presence. So to say that you love your enemy in this political season, someone of the opposite political party, is hollow and shallow and a vain conceit if it doesn't mean that you're willing to sit down over coffee and develop a relationship with that person. And I find this very difficult. I don't know about you, but it's difficult. Love is a rugged commitment to spend time with someone. Third, love is not only a rugged commitment to be with, it is also a rugged commitment to be with someone as an advocate or someone who is for. So rugged commitment, withness, and forness. One of the great lines in the Bible is, And we sang this indirectly in the first song today. I will be your God, and you will be my people. This is a great statement by God in the Bible that could be translated in paraphrastic form as, I've got your back. I'm in your corner. I'm on your team. I'll be there when you need me. So that love is a rugged commitment to be with someone in such a way that it communicates advocacy. And here's what I've learned in life, and I think we see this in the pages of the Bible. When someone makes a rugged commitment to be with you long enough through physical presence, you know that by the commitment of physical presence, which actually means present, my wife's a psychologist, and she'll say to me, sometimes she's talking to me, and she'll say, Scott, what did I just say? Because she knows I'm elsewhere. And I have an automatic response. You just said you're the most beautiful woman in the world, and I agree. She'll then say, what did I say? And I won't remember. So I'm there, but I'm not present. So presence for Yahweh, presence in genuine love, is a genuine presence. Genuine presence over time, physical embodied presence, communicates to another person that you are in their corner. Over time, you can convince people who are your enemies that you not only are committed to them to be with them, but that you're actually in their corner. And this is the way we turn enemies into neighbors. But there is something very special in the pages of the Bible about God's love for his people. And it distinguishes Christian love, biblical love, from love in contemporary cultures. And that is the fourth point. And that is, love is a rugged commitment to be with someone as someone who is for them. But there is an unto-ness, a direction in Christian love that you too will grow together into Christ-likeness so that you can walk in the way of Jesus. Yahweh says to Israel, be holy because I am holy. So the ontology of God, I think I can use that term, God's being, by being present, becomes transformative in us. That the more in union we are with God and with Christ, the more Christ-like we become. And love is a rugged commitment to be with another person and to be for another person in such a way that we grow unto Christ-likeness over time. Now, I'm going to give you a challenge today. And I'm going to give you a challenge to admit an enemy. And then to admit that enemy into your life. And to pray for that enemy. And to turn that enemy into a neighbor by spending time with that person. Don't tell them, you're my enemy and I want to spend time with you. Don't say that. Just say, you know, let's go have coffee together and develop a relationship with them. All right? And I think that Jesus gave the Jesus Creed because we need this. We need a daily reminder that our responsibility is to love our neighbor as ourselves and to turn our enemies into neighbors. So I'm going to ask you to stand with me. Is this okay if I do this, Brian? Is this the invitation? I grew up Baptist. So please stand with me. And we're going to say the Jesus Creed together, all right? You can repeat it after me. But this is a commitment, and I'd urge you to do this. And it's dangerous for your moral life that every morning when you get up, say this. And every evening when you go to bed, say this. And within a month, you will be bothered by the Jesus Creed into turning enemies into neighbors. Please repeat with me. Hear, O Israel.
Hear, O Israel.
The Lord our God.
The Lord our God.
The Lord is one.
Love the Lord your God,
with all your heart,
with all your soul,
with all your mind,
and all your strength.
And the second is this.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
There is no commandment greater than these. Thank you.
Thank you so much for launching this series on Kingdom Vision as a Way of Life. The additional collaborative partner or program for Scott McKnight's time with us is the Missional Church Event Partnership. Partnership between Virginia Mennonite Conference, Virginia Mennonite Missions, Parkview Mennonite Church, EMU, and EMS, as in the seminary. And many of them, the partners, are here. This evening, the event is 7 p.m. at Parkview Mennonite Church, and the focus is a fellowship of difference and the challenge of slavery. And then tomorrow morning at chapel gathering at the seminary, Martin Chapel, tell the story of Jesus. Scott's book, Jesus Creed, only one of his 50 books, is available for sale and other resources here in the foyer, but also at every event. And today, and hopefully tomorrow at lunch and Friday chapel, we're collecting coins and also paper money for My Coins Count, supporting Mennonite Central Committee and Virginia Mennonite Missions projects at the Virginia Relief Sale this weekend. So you'll see the buckets on your way out, and just empty your pockets today and Friday. Anyway, Mission and Service is co-sponsored with Career Services. And Kimberly, would you stand for a minute? Kimberly is our Director of Career Services. She's available right before lunch to get a meal ticket, if you don't have a meal plan, to join the reps from the various agencies that are here and myself in the East Dining Room for conversation about Mission and Service. And then Campus Ministries is welcoming any students in particular, to come tonight at 5 p.m. to the University Commons, 211, 212, for a free meal. And we'll be hearing from Scott McKnight there as well, being missional among your peers, with your peers. Let's once again welcome Scott and also go with active peace and love. Welcome, Scott, with applause as we end.